My heart and soul are yours, by Cyriath, read by Marwantastic. A Roy at Solbon AU. Being Edward Elric's soulmate has never been easy. Roy Mustang is sure that Ed would complain the same about him if he had a name to match with the sensations, but for now Roy merely listens with amusement to Ed's outrage at the inconsiderate goddamn bastard. Girls can be bastards too, just saying, who keeps going and getting themselves whatever the fuck it is. He never seems to take it well when Roy points out that Ed's poor soulmate must have it much worse, what with how often Ed is getting into fights, and how he bumps his head on the tops of doorways so often. Oh, wait, that can't be right. All joking aside, however, Roy holds it close to him that he knows what it's like to lose an arm, to lose a leg, to have an automail attachment surgery done, a pain that he has never known the likes of in his life. And though he could make the argument that, of the two, he has it worse, he unerringly considers it a more than acceptable trade-off to being Edward Elric's soulmate. Equivalent exchange, or something like that. But it truly is an honor, Roy thinks sometimes, that the universe has taken a look at all its inhabitants and decided in whatever way it does that Roy Mustang is best suited to Edward Elric. Sometimes he doesn't believe it, wonders if he should head to Rush Valley and track down someone with a similar automail timeline as Ed's. But then Ed walks into his office, agitated and blustering, and Havoc throws a pen at Ed's head, and Roy feels the slightly stinging thwop. No, this is real. And he allows himself a small, fond smile as he watches Ed whirl on Havoc and shriek his displeasure. And then he winces as Ed flops down into a chair, crossing his legs. Roy suspects that Ed must have a permanent bruise on his shin from the automail leg and the way he crosses them. What do you want? Roy only raises one eyebrow at Ed, looking utterly unperturbed. You're the one who stormed into my office like you've started another fire. Ed scoffs, and Roy smirks. He can't know. 18. Roy has promised himself, when Ed turns 18, then, if Ed seems ready, he'll tell him. Doesn't hurt me. You wanna feel how it feels. You wanna know that it doesn't hurt me. You wanna hear about the deal I'm making. He wavers before Briggs when they meet in the car. Surely Ed must know, after lust, after what has to have been some of the most agonizing pain of his life, of their lives. Roy can see the scowl even as Ed shifts around uncomfortably in Roy's passenger seat, undoubtedly sharing the same discomfort of the healing burn in Roy's side. But he makes no indication, only gives one of those speeches that he thinks are only half-inspiring as they truly are. And Roy listens, heartbreaking a little more at each word. Ed says nothing of the two of them, not like that, and Roy lets him go. He thinks of him, of course, with the little aches and pains that come from having automail, with the whatever trouble Ed is getting into that earns him smacks and blows, or the awful pained numbness that comes with it getting too damn cold. But he deals, and he continues, even without his team, working himself half to death, though doing his best to keep Ed from taking the brunt of it. And one day, when he's lounging at his mother's brothel with Melody, one of his mother's workers, and a loyal friend, chatting her up, a screaming pain rips through his gut. White rushes through his vision for several moments before he comes slightly more to his senses, realizing that he's lying on the ground, mostly insensate. The pain hasn't lessened, as many injuries do after the initial shock. It's worsened noticeably. Roy chokes out, trying to put himself into a sitting position, but his own shaking arms and Melody's gentle hands on his shoulder preclude that very quickly. He lies back, panting, staring at the ceiling with wide eyes. "What's going on?" Melody asks, voice urgent, eyes flicking over him in a muted panic, though she doesn't let it show anywhere else. "Roy, are you all right?" "It's... oh..." Roy groans, eyes closing as another wave of pain courses through him. "He's hurt. It's... he's... in trouble. I have to..." He takes a gasping breath, trying to focus. If he leaves now, he can make it to Briggs Inn. "You're not going anywhere," Melody pushes him back down. "You told me yourself, he's days of travel away, and who knows where he is now?" Roy screams, and she jumps back in alarm. Royal's nails digging into the ground beside him. Soulmate bonds don't transmit emotional pain, just physical, so why does it feel like his soul is being sucked away? Is this what it feels like to lose a soulmate? But it's something different than that, he thinks, he hopes, around a haze of pain swamping him again. It's his life force, his being. What the hell is Ed doing? He tries to stand again, to make his way to the nearest train station and order them to depart north immediately, but Melody's hands grab his shoulders again, pushing him back down. This time, when the white takes him, he doesn't come back. And if I only could make a deal with God and get him to swap our places. It takes stern speeches from both his mother and Melody to prevent Roy from leaping out of his bed and going off to Ed immediately. "He'll already have left Briggs," they tell him, "if he's hurt that badly, and from what you've told us, you'll never find him." He has to begrudgingly admit that they have a point. Still, he clings to the twinges and sometimes agonizing jolts of pain that shoot through his uninjured gut like a dying man, clutching to the knowledge that Ed is still alive. He busies himself then. He has to. If he doesn't, he finds himself spiraling into doubt, into worry, into a frantic helplessness that does not suit the future leader of a country. Damn Edward Elric for turning Roy into this. It takes a coup of a country to distract him, and sometimes even that doesn't work. One evening, he finds himself turning a pen over in his fingers, the sharp nib gleaming in the rays of the setting sun. He traces it against his palm at first, then presses it into the base of his hand. Not hard enough to draw blood, or even hurt too much, but enough to stop his mind from wandering, to draw him to the present, to... "Don't forget me." A sharp, stinging sensation spreads across the back of the hand in question, as if someone has just smacked his hand away. He can practically hear the voice, "Fucking stop that, you asshole!" Roy smiles wryly, pulling the pen away, reaching out to set it on the table. Ed will be fine. He always is. It's himself Roy is worried about. "You don't wanna hurt me. Let's see how deep the bullet lies. Unaware that I'm tearing you asunder. There's a thunder in our hearts, babe." Roy gets the news from one of his scouts of a sighting outside the city. He almost doesn't believe it, not at first. Ed's timing is too fortuitous, too fortunate, but then, so is his own, he supposes. He has his people keep an eye out, hovers over every report as he holds his breath, traces what he can and fervently hopes over what he can't. He's waited months. He can wait a little longer. And even amongst everything, the plots, the fighting, the chaos, Roy finds time. He finds Edward. He does it in the most melodramatic way possible, of course, but how else is he supposed to impress him after everything he must have seen in his time away? Maybe I can lend you a hand for metal. Roy downright relishes the shifting expressions that flicker across Ed's face. Relief, exasperation, hope, resignation, and, for a moment, pure joy. Roy can't let him down now, can't back down after making such a firm promise, a declaration in the guise of a jest. And it isn't hard to assess the situation either, he mulls, as he watches Ed's heaving back. God, he's missed it, the tight muscle underneath those clothes, the tension as Ed tries to determine his next course of action. And he doesn't miss the conflict either, the struggle between the need to preserve life and the need to survive. So he makes a decision without hesitation. He always will when Ed is involved. Roy has already tainted himself. He can do it a little more to stop the same from happening to Ed. And as the flames rush around them, illuminating Ed's horrified face, the only regret he has is that Ed can see Roy for who he truly is. Something in him waits for the rejection, even as he defends his actions. Enemies. No other choice. The words ring hollow to his ears, and he can only imagine what they sound like to Ed's. And Ed nods, tired but accepting, watching Roy with a muted desperation that Roy doesn't know how to identify. Idly, Roy notices the brief pain of a spark singeing through his jacket. He barely reacts, used to such inconveniences, but Ed flinches backwards, covering his arm. Roy turns to watch him, a tight sensation in his throat. Ed only stands there, watching back. Roy lifts his arm, glancing at the hole in the fabric. He'd repair it later. I appear to have burned my arm, he says, voice neutral, expression impassive. Ed's, however, shifts from confusion to realization to shock almost too quickly for Roy to process it. But he doesn't pull away, not when Roy reaches for him, not when he takes Ed's wrist and tucks him in. Ed gapes at Roy's gloved hand and shivers. Roy? Roy knows it's stupid, but he reaches over to pull it off just for a few moments and cups Ed's face, watching him, searching. Ed initiates the kiss. Roy has had plenty of lovers in his time. He very much suspects, given Ed's kissing abilities, that Ed is precisely the opposite. Still, as clumsy, warm lips fit over his, as teeth clack just a bit in eagerness before Roy manages to coax Ed into exerting the proper amount of pressure, Roy has never had anything better. Nor has he, despite being Edward Elric's soulmate, even imagined that this might be possible. That Ed's fingers would be burying themselves in his hair, that Roy's tongue would be slipping into Ed's mouth, tasting him the way he had wanted to for an unfairly long amount of time. That he could hold Ed against him, flush and warm, cradling the back of his head with the tenderness that Ed allowed from few, if any, people. Except Roy. A throat cleared from beside them, and Ed leaped back, panting. His eyes cast about and land on Risa, and he promptly turned the color of his coat. If we can continue, she says neutrally, eyeing Roy out of the corner of her eye. In his defense, he had told her that he had been planning to wait, but sometimes these things just happen. Yeah, Ed croaks out at the same time as Roy's, indeed. But as they turn away, heading forward, Ed's left hand darts out to give Roy's a squeeze. It hurts, just a little, but seeing the way that Ed's shoulders relax when it does, well, it's more than worth it.
If I only could,
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the story, please leave some feedback for the author. Find them as Xyriath on AO3, that is XYRIATH. And if you would like to leave me some feedback, please find me as MomoPods, also on AO3. The song used in this recording as scene breaks is called Running Up That Hill, in a cover version by Placebo. And now some quick reader free talk, which I'm entirely winging without any sort of script, although I usually write myself a little script for these things, but anyway, here we go. It's called free talk after all. So when I got back, well, not got back, when I properly got into the Fullmetal Alchemist fandom a couple of years ago, I fell hard for the Roy Ed pairing. Like, when I first watched Fullmetal Alchemist, I immediately loved Ed, and I also immediately loved Roy. And I think back in the day, which is now at least 10 years ago, I already shipped them. But apart from looking up a couple of doujinshi, I think I didn't really, you know, look into the pairing in any way. So then I got back into it a few years ago. I don't know exactly how many. And I went looking for fanfic, and I started out by looking for soulmate AUs, because I think it was Podfig, as per usual, that got me back into the fandom. And I'd listened to a soulmate AU Podfig called An Interesting Trip by Shana Storyteller, Podfig by The 24th Key, and Rhea314. And it's still one of my favorite podfics. You should go listen to it because it's amazing. Anyway, it's a soulmate AU. And so I was craving soulmate AUs, something terrible. So I went looking for them, and then I found this story. And it is one of the best ones out there for this pairing. Like, I've reread this so many times, I've lost count. And it's just, I love the concept. I know that very recently, Tearfall, who is another extremely talented author for this pairing and also in general, has written this sort of trope with the soulmates and the feeling each other's pain, although CZ has interpreted it slightly differently. Anyway, this is such a good trope. I love it. And as the summary that I didn't read out in the podfic says, that in a world where you feel your soulmate's pain, it's not easy being Edward Elric's soulmate. And it's just, I don't know, there's just something about this story that really just grips me and won't let go. So I made the decision to finally podfic it, and Xyriath gave me permission to podfic it. And I'm really, really happy that I got to record this story, and that it exists in the first place, that I get to read this story over and over again, and now people get to listen to it, and I probably will end up listening to my own podfic over and over again, just because I adore this story so much. As for the actual, you know, voice part of podficking, I don't have much experience with podficking Fullmetal Alchemist stories. I did, I think, three stories for ITPE 2017 with Roy Ed as a pairing. And I didn't go back to listen to them before I started recording this one. And then I just started recording this, and I was like, wait, what voices did I use last time? Did they work out? What voices should I use this time? And then I think I just sort of ended up with making Roy sound as posh as I could, and Ed just as much of a teenage brat as I could, which is both very difficult for me because I am over 30 years old. I don't remember what it's like to be a bratty teenager, hardly, because I was more of a emo teenager than a bratty one. And also, I'm not posh in any way. At least I don't think I am. So anyway, that was an experience for sure. So yeah, please, if you are going to leave me feedback for this recording, do tell me what you thought of the voices and the narration and whether it worked for you or not, because I'd be very interested to hear what you think of my, like, auditory interpretation of these characters. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening all the way through to the end. You are amazing and deserve all the cookies in the world. Unless you're diabetic, in which case you deserve all the treats that won't kill you in the world. Alright, I'll stop now. Bye!